Hi, I'm Samantha, a past guest on CJAM's HandyLink. You're listening to HandyLink on CJAM 99.1 FM, reaching high ground in Windsor, Detroit.
Sponsored by the Italian-Canadian Handy Capable Association, an organization that provides recreational and athletic opportunities for individuals with disabilities in Windsor, Essex. I'm your host, Cam Wells. In the first segment of our show, I'll be chatting with Paula Kalea, who will be telling us a little bit about her experiences during the COVID isolation.
Well, we're all kind of struggling a little bit. I think we all have our own stresses going on right now, and I think the most important thing is just connecting, just taking the time you have to reach out to your family, friends, loved ones. I feel like that's been my saving grace, is speaking with my family. We've developed a WhatsApp group chat, and we talk every single day on there, so very fortunate to see I have two nephews, aged 7 and 4, and one niece, she's just over 1 year old, and we get to see each other every day. Like, thank God for technology, because that's really what's been getting our family through it. That's mainly it, just, you know, connecting and just having all this time to get things done that you always procrastinate when you're oh so busy with the hectic daily living, you know, just organizing paperwork. I'm repotting plants as we speak, just doing the little things that you push off. And really, when you think about it, there is a lot of little things to do to keep occupied. I also have been trying to stay active on the good days, like the weather-wise. I know that's kind of been a little weird too, this past couple weeks, or several weeks really, but now that the sun's kind of out lately, I mean, I think everyone's lifting up their spirits and just hoping for the best, praying for everyone who's affected by this, who's not affected. I think the kids have it the worst of all of us right now. I know mental health is like, plummeting currently, so I think it's important to just rely on your loved ones or anyone you know that is alone, offer to help them out. Like, I know personally, I have reached out to the elderly in my community through phone, and I just offer to grab them anything when I go to the grocery store, and I know they really appreciate that. I've also offered to do, I just cut lawns and, you know, just help, because everyone's just so limited. That's kind of how my sisters and I were raised, help those who need it, and I could only imagine on that level. You know, it's weird, even the way they have grocery stores set up. I noticed yesterday we had to do a big run, and there's like all these shopping carts turned upside down to make like aisles. Very bizarre. I have wondered how people with disabilities get around with like a wheelchair and whatnot. So I actually wanted to ask you about that myself.
I've had no problems so far, other than the whole bumper to bumper aspect, but I do recognize a lot of people who have a mobility device or lower vision or what have you have been having some difficulty.
Well, nothing's the same right now. Like I just mentioned with the grocery shopping carts, like, it's bizarre the way they have things set up. So the people who rely on their consistent environment, my heart really goes out to them because this world is just really mixed up at the moment. So just trying to help those that need it, you know.
So in the midst of this, have you heard anything encouraging about sense of community you alluded to earlier?
Community, like how so exactly? You know what, actually, though, sorry, I even questioned you on that. Today, I just in the house, and we heard a whole lot of people honking their horns and some ruckus going on, and turns out they were having a birthday party for me, so I thought that was pretty cool. Just, you know, they were just driving around the area, just honking, and it said on there, happy birthday so-and-so, and I thought that was pretty cool to see. I personally, when I'm out, which isn't often, but when I am out, I try to just do little things, like in a grocery store, if something fell off the shelf, pick it up, you know, like, I know it's the littlest thing, but I like to think that it does go a long way.
What message would you send to the community about keeping hope and just staying above this whole situation?
Stay strong, guys. Just unite. Rely on your loved ones. If you know someone's alone, reach out to them. You never know. There is a lot of people alone out there, and I recently just heard that Ontario specifically has more recovery cases than people affected with COVID-19. So there was a lot of hope for myself, and I passed that along to as many people as I knew, because I think it's really important to realize that there's a purpose in all this. We need to flatten the curve, and slowly but surely we are. And I know there are some people, quite a few people out there, especially the essential workers, that aren't able to isolate, you know. So to the ones who can, we are it. We are going to contain this virus, and it's on us. And I think we're doing pretty good. We're very fortunate our government caught on sooner than later and started implementing these rules in society. I know in Michigan, currently across the border, everyone has to wear a mask. It's mandated. We're not like that because we're not as affected. I mean, we don't have nearly as much of a population as they do, but still, we all have to be accountable and hold ourselves responsible to keep flattening this curve. So I think alone, just knowing the recovery is starting to outweigh the people affected was a lot of hope personally for myself and my loved ones. So just stay positive. Positivity, the power of positive thinking, it goes a long way. Share the love.
So I'm curious, when you mentioned you had young nephews and nieces, well, how did you go about explaining this whole situation to them?
Honestly, it wasn't so much, because my sister and her husband have been quarantining themselves since March break, which was, I think the start of March break was March 16th, so it was really more so my sister and her husband just explaining that there's so many germs out of their house right now, and we need to wash our hands to get rid of those germies. Sadly, I haven't been with them. I've done a bunch of window visits, which were fun, but the boys just were hugging through glass. We're kissing through glass. It's been hard, but it's harder for them, you know.
So what additional information would you like people to know about this whole thing?
I just think that the whole mental health aspect, that people really are struggling financially. Not a lot of people have a backup fund for a rainy day. Yep. Well, I mean, considering looking at mental health, and a lot of people are found tough times financially, not a lot of people have a rainy day backup fund. No one can plan for this, understandably, but at the same time, I truly believe that we need to learn from history and not make history repeat itself. And if anyone knows anything about the Spanish flu, from my understanding, the government, everyone is in self-isolation, and then a lot of people recovered, and the government called off the self-isolating, and everyone went back to their daily routines, partied, got together in common areas, and saw their loved ones and mingled. And unfortunately, a second wave of the Spanish flu hit the world so hard that it wiped out more people than World War I altogether. So the biggest thing, I think, is just being patient and really trusting our system to protect us. And we need to be accountable for this. We need to be responsible. And I would hate to see history repeat itself with this. And I know people are upset. There's protests going on either way. I mean, I know Florida just reopened beaches, and I don't know, I won't even get into that, but I mean, the definition of insanity
is doing the same thing, expecting a different result.
Thank you. So, I mean, I'm getting goosebumps just talking about this, right? But we need to learn from our ancestors and all their pain, loss, and agony, and, you know, just, again, stay positive, stay focused. Keep your mind occupied and just stay healthy. Go walk. Go on a bike. Do something. Anything. Physical activity is probably, you know, even lift weights in your home. You don't even have to leave home for that. So just stay connected and keep healthy. And I mean, everyone, keep the chin up. Support each other.
Bye. Thank you for taking the time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great.
Oh, my pleasure, Kim. Thanks for having me again. Appreciate that.
Andy Link will be right back after these commercial messages, so stay tuned.
The Sexual Wellness and Consent Committee wants to teach you how to be an ally. Listen, be open to learning from the experience of others. Believe. Support survivors and those affected by violence. Speak out. Add your voice to call out violence. Intervene. Find a safe way to help when you see acts of gender-based violence. Act. Give your time to organizations working to end violence and be the change you want to see. A message from the Sexual Wellness and Consent Committee at the University of Windsor.
Welcome back to HandyLink, sponsored by the Italian-Canadian Handy Capable Association, an organization that provides recreational and athletic opportunities for individuals with disabilities in Windsor, Essex. I'm your host, Cam Wells. Earlier in our show, Paula Kalea shared her insights about mental health, wellness, and just dealing with COVID-19.
In this segment of our show, we'll hear from Rados Karavica, who will be telling us a little bit about his disability advocacy work. Tell me a little bit about the latest with your disabilities advocacy work.
So, last year I moved to UK from Serbia to undertake my PhD journey. So I got accepted as one of the people working on disability advocacy research in Europe project. It's the name of the project funded by European Union through Horizon 2020 scheme, aiming to support young early stage researchers to develop their research careers in the field of disability advocacy. And I was one of the 15 people that embarked on this project that were selected to undertake different kind of disability advocacy projects. And my project is based in UK at the University of Leeds and the School of Sociology and Social Policy, focusing on disabled children's participation in healthcare decision making. So shortly, this is where I am now. And As I said, I moved from Serbia, where I used to work for United Nations for the Office of High Commissioner for Human Rights at, on disability project over there in Serbia. We focused on legal capacity regime reform. So I can say that I switched from UN to academia, and now I'm in totally different role and different practicing different form of advocacy, doing the academic research and hoping to utilize the data which I will obtain through the research to further my advocacy, this time concerning disabled children.
So when you mention inclusion in decision making, what are some of the challenges faced by these children?
Yeah, so the key premise of my research and the approach I'm taking is that the children are competent social actors which are able to contribute to their environment and society at large with their own views and opinions. And that's the very issue, how society is seeing children. How do we differentiate between childhood and adulthood? Do we see children as mere objects of adults' concern, or as beings which merit their views to be heard right now, and to consider what they like and dislike, what their opinions are on different topics. So do we consider them as a beings who are valued in present, and not only beings which we are expecting to grow later on in the future into fully competent adults. So these considerations are visible across different life domains in law, in education, in consent to medical interventions. So usually law differentiates between childhood and adulthood, saying when young people have the right to consent to medical treatments, and setting the age limits. And we know that competence and capacities are not necessarily related to age limits. One 16-year-old can have very differing capacities than to his or her own peers. So the age is not only indicator of the capacities and the competence of young people. The social factors and the environment play a big role in how capacities are formed and when.
So, in your work, since taking up work in the UK, has there been any success you've experienced that you'd like to share?
Can I repeat the question, because the connection was a little bit poor?
Since taking up the reins in the UK, has there been any success moment that you've experienced?
Well, it's early to say, but I can definitely say that the mere fact that I'm here and embarking on this PhD journey is quite a success, because this DARE project, I'm using the abbreviated form, Disability Advocacy Research in Europe, was very competitive in its recruitment stages, and the fact that 15 of us managed to get selected out of who knows how many people have applied is really amazing, and I feel privileged to work with other disability researchers both here at the University of Leeds and with other researchers across the Europe in their project, working on different universities and different kinds of amazing topics. So this kind of partnership that I'm having the opportunity to experience, and in civil society is really amazing, because I forgot to mention that this DARE project, each of these projects, including mine, we are fostering partnerships with disability community, with DPOs, different kinds of organizations, and different kinds of universities. So we are not working in isolation, but constantly having the opportunity for reality check and for the communication with DPOs.
Like to thank you for taking the time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great.
Yeah, yeah.
In this segment of our show, I'll be chatting with Alice Vincent, who will be telling us a little bit about her experiences with MCS. So tell me a little bit about your experiences with MCS.
Well, it's a medical injury. It's often called a condition, but it's actually a medical injury as a result of exposure to chemicals, predominantly synthetic fragrances and household cleaning products.
And how does this affect you?
Well, it's a progressive injury that gets worse over time. And at this point in my life, I'm pretty much housebound. I take my dog for a walk, I go to my parents, and I go to a grocery store to get groceries, and that's pretty much it.
So, how were you diagnosed in the first place?
Well, it's very difficult to get a diagnosis in Canada. A little easier in Ontario. There are a couple of hospitals and clinics that do it. But it took me several years to get a diagnosis for multiple chemical sensitivities because I couldn't get a doctor. I was one of the people that didn't have a doctor for several years, and therefore it made it more difficult for me to get the diagnosis, even though the symptoms and everything were very clear pretty much from the beginning. And I was injured in my workplace. I worked in an automotive factory in Waterloo, Ontario, and I was exposed to isocyanates, solvents, amines, MDIs, those type of chemicals. And that is how I initially became injured, because of the lack of information and knowledge about this injury. There's very little education around it. There's possibly also not much interest in, you know, damaging a multi-billion dollar industry.
Of course. But how did it impact your work life subsequent to the injury itself?
I found it increasingly difficult to be able to work. In the span of, I think it was 15 years, I just had to go through this recently. My Revenue Canada job ROEs indicate that I had more than 30 jobs in 15 years, 11 of those in 2 years alone, because as my injury got worse and worse and worse, because I was unable to avoid exposure, my condition became worse, and there are very few places that actually understand what a fragrance-free environment means.
So, to look at the converse side of things, how have you been able to cope successfully? What have you done that's proven especially effective in supporting yourself in this?
Well, I have been very blessed. I'm luckier than a lot of people. I have a very supportive family, and I've been able to finally find work from home. But I mean, I've experienced a lot of trauma, a lot of workplace abuse. I've twice had to go to the Human Rights Tribunal for workplace discrimination and abuse, harassment.
So what message would you send to the community about your condition? Would you like people to know?
I would say that 34% of the population is sensitive to synthetic fragrances and cleaning chemicals, and it's not an allergy. There's a very distinct difference between an allergy and a chemical injury. An allergy will go away once the exposure goes away, usually, you know, or sometimes with the help of an EpiPen or medication, whereas each encounter with a chemical creates actual damage if you have a sensitivity. And there is only one pathway. If you don't avoid exposures, you will eventually most likely become disabled. 9% of the population is actually disabled and unable to function in society as a result of exposure to chemicals. The two most famous cases of multiple chemical sensitivity are the Gulf War syndrome and 9/11 syndrome. Those are extreme examples of multiple chemical sensitivities. But I would tell people, educate yourself, find out what's in the products you're using. That's the most important thing. Know what you're inhaling into your and going straight to your brain. Know what's in that fabric refresher that you're spraying on the couch before you lay your baby on it.
So it can get so bad that a person can suffer such long-term damage they wouldn't be able to really go anywhere in society?
I'm sorry, it wouldn't be able to go out anywhere? Is that what you said?
Yes.
Yes, a significant number of us are that way. We are pretty much housebound. Many of us, myself included, end up homeless at some point. I've lived in my car for a few weeks because I just couldn't find any place suitable to live. There's no, despite the fact that the government includes it in their Canadian Community Health Survey, and they know exactly how many people are injured by this, there's very little to no education or awareness brought forth by the government or accommodation.
I'd thank you for taking the time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great.
Thank you very much, Cam.
Of course. Yeah.
My friends, I hope today's interviews are a reminder that, well, life is enduring. People are enduring. The world is not stopping simply because times are tough. People like Paula are continuing to love their families, support their communities. People like Rados are continuing to be out there providing advocacy work, which can never stop. But the fact is, if we let things fall by the wayside, we're going to find ourselves at the other end of this situation, only it will have just accumulated. Fact is, if we live in strength, dignity, and community now, things will be better on the other side of all this. And as a people, we're gaining a lot in terms of our understanding, too. This has been HandyLink. I'm your host, Cam Wells, reminding you, we're all equal. So get on out there and have yourselves a good one. Something tells me you've earned it, folks. We'll see you next week.